your News Talk America for this Wednesday. I'm your anchorman, Jake Smith, with you until noon Eastern Time. My friends, we talk about the economic threat to our future, the budget deficit and out-of-control federal spending, inflation. But what if the greatest threat to our future isn't economic at all, but cultural? Dr. Mark Evans is joining us. He's sounding the alarm on America's cultural amnesia. Is there hope as history, language, and fine arts are taking a beating? Dr. Evans, welcome to Your News Talk America. Thanks for coming on.
It's my pleasure. I'm very pleased to join you.
So tell us why you feel that the greatest threat to our future isn't economic, it's cultural. I read the information from your book, and I have to say I agree with you wholeheartedly. Culture, not only here in the United States, but all over the world, is taking a pounding. Go ahead, doctor.
Well, I think that we are, in fact, in the midst of a cultural crisis. The doctor in front of my name isn't medical, it's musical. I grew up in the music department at a large movie studio in Hollywood. And so I'm very conscious of what's going on in the world of music and the arts in general. And I've been very concerned about students coming out of school unfamiliar with any music other than what they've encountered on social media. And that usually means nothing but rock, rap, and pop. And many of them haven't read a book that has not been assigned to them. And many have even not even a minimal knowledge of our history. So I came to the conclusion that we really are in danger of seeing the best of our arts, music, theater, books, film, fading into oblivion, and with it a loss of our language and very much a loss of our history. And that's been caused by a number of things, and that's why I decided I wanted to light a few candles rather than curse the darkness. So I came up with a concept of cultural conservation, saying we need to identify the problem and then decide what we can do with it. So I started an organization, a nonprofit organization called Cultural Conservation, and I've written several books on this subject.
You know, it just seems to me that we have a problem now. Rather than look or read something that is cultural, this is the People magazine generation, isn't it?
Absolutely. And in fact, I have four pillars that I talk about when I talk about cultural conservation. And the second one actually is the fact that fame is not synonymous with quality. And we live now what I call the celebrity culture. And I won't mention any names. We all know who the celebrities are. Their faces are glaring at us on the cover of every tabloid. And you can't tune into a television or radio show or listen to a podcast without people talking about them. So we tend to assume that if people are important, they're important because they've accomplished something. But many of these are people who are just famous for being famous. We also made the mistake of assuming that change and progress are synonymous, and they're not. Change may be good, but it also may not be. It was C.S. Lewis who once said that we all want progress, but if you're on the wrong road, you need to do an about turn and walk back to the right road. And this is very much the case. Gilbert Keith Chesterton said that fallacies do not cease to be fallacies because they become fashions. So we have a celebrity culture. We have the assumption that change and progress are synonymous. We also, in this day and age, tend to assume that technology and wisdom are synonymous. And they're not. You can have a lot of information, even accurate information, and still not have any knowledge and probably not very much common sense. And also, when you talk about the notion of a celebrity culture, people tend to like what they know. And if you talk to especially students coming out of school, they will tell you, well, I know what I like. But in reality, they like what they know, what they're familiar with. And in most cases, that's not very much.
But no one's challenging them to know anything different in schools, are they, Dr. Evans?
No, unfortunately. And when we talk about a cultural crisis, we talk about, you know, trying to find places we can go for solutions. And I cite three specific places that we often go. And obviously, they're not the solution. They're part of the problem. And one of them is the one that you're mentioning, academia. When you take a look at what the schools are doing now, public schools, private schools, the colleges and universities, many have become indoctrination centers. And many of them also are absolutely obsessed with being trendy, with being ideologically or politically correct, but especially trying to make sure that they are with it without ever describing precisely what it is. And then people also look for a solution in the government. And it doesn't take very much imagination to realize that the government is usually part of the problem. I agree wholeheartedly with President Ronald Reagan when he said the scariest words in the English language were, "Hi, I'm from the government and I'm here,
to help.
And then finally, we turn to the entertainment industry. And of course, the entertainment industry is obsessively concerned with the pecking order within the industry, but also being fashionable, following trends, and especially making money and trying to make a lot of it. And so the result is that they tend to denigrate the past. They tend to denigrate our history. On my own radio or television shows, I always sign off with a line, we should respect the best of the past, which shouldn't be forgotten, the best of the present, which shouldn't be ignored, and the best of the future, which shouldn't be undiscovered. And I wrote a couple of books on this subject. One of them is a book called Mark My Words. And the subtitle says it all, How to Discover the Joy of Music, the Delight of Language, and the Pride of Achievement in the Age of Trash Talk and Cultural Chaos. And the other one is Our Musical Heritage, which is my guided tour through concert music, jazz, musical theater, and film music, four genres of American music. And none of this is really being taught in schools today. And our country has a fascinating musical history as our 250th birthday approaches. And it's something that should be pursued by every parent and grandparent.
Dr. Evans, I was reading your bio this morning, and you and I are quite a bit alike, spent many, many years in radio, over 50 years in radio and television. I worked on the Paramount lot in the 1990s through the early 2000s. But what you have seen in the media, in broadcasting, and on the studio lots has changed over the years. Let's look at the studio lots, for instance. They don't even hire writers anymore. They keep churning out the same crap. It's Bewitched 2 and Mission Impossible 5. At least the studios used to do projects at least one or two a year that had some cultural value. They don't do any anymore. At least the BBC, and I'm not on the same political course as the BBC, but they still have programming where they're doing radio plays and radio concerts, and they take some of their television shows. Even in the 90s, they were doing this where they actually did radio versions of television shows that were popular. That is culture. That helps to maintain and exceed the culture or maintain the culture in a country. We don't do any of that here anymore.
No, we certainly don't. And I think you and I have some other things in common, because my great mentor in my musical childhood was a wonderful gentleman called Irvin Talbot, who spent 45 years at Paramount as the conductor of the Paramount Orchestra. And of course,
they don't even have their own orchestra anymore. They farm their music out.
Yes, it's a lot of the music now is being done by people on synthesizers. And of course, people are predicting now a lot of the scripts and music and even the acting will be done by creations of artificial intelligence.
Yeah,
I think that people really cannot be replaced, because if you look at the great classic films of the past, you'll find the technology has improved tremendously over the decades, and certainly you can't compare the technology that was available 50 years ago to the technology that's available today. But while the technology may be better, the creativity, the imagination, the energy, the soul, the heart and soul of creativity really is not. And I've been privileged to have a chance to get to know some of the finest composers and writers dating back because of my meeting a lot of them when I was a little boy. And these are people who were absolute creative giants. And you also had people who ran studios who greatly appreciated what America had done for them. I always joke about the fact that back in the glory days of MGM in the 1930s and 40s,
right,
when the studio was run by the iron-fisted Louis B. Mayer, right, was an immigrant who greatly appreciated the United States, and he actually did not know the actual date of his birth, and he would celebrate his birthday on the 4th of July. And at MGM, they celebrated the 4th of July, the birthday of the United States and the birthday of Louis B. Mayer, perhaps not necessarily in that order of importance in Culver City.
I did not know that. And of course, the great movie, The Wizard of Oz, would never have happened if it not had been for the great Louis B. Mayer. Well, I'm interested, Dr. Evans, what lot did you work on when you were out in Hollywood?
Well, I grew up in the music department at Universal, but when I wrote an earlier book about the history of movie scores called Soundtrack, the Music of the Movies, and when I was working on that, I had an opportunity to spend time in the music libraries of virtually all the major studios, and I knew many of the great composers. Miklos Rozsa wrote the introduction to my book on film music. I had guidance from people like David Raxon, who was the composer of Laura, and the great Bernard Herrmann, who was famous for scoring Citizen Kane and many of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. And of course, what's happened is that in the entertainment industry, gradually there was a revolution. People don't realize this, but when soundtracks of motion picture scores were originally considered for release, nobody thought anyone would have any interest in them. David O. Selznick wanted to release the music of Gone with the Wind on record.
Gone with the Wind, yeah.
And he was told nobody would be interested. And that changed in the 60s and 70s. And so you had executives suddenly saying, if we have a film score, it has to be something that we can sell to the kids. And this meant, of course, that you started seeing the advent of the rockers and rappers taking over. And that's a sad state of affairs. And that's true not only in Hollywood, it's true on Broadway. Right. It's true and not just in music, it's true in every aspect of the arts. It's also true in the area of books as well. And we're losing our sense of history, which I think is another very serious challenge.
No question about it. Ask you, Dr. Mark Evans, parents, grandparents are listening to, teachers are listening to our interview, our discussion today. What is the first step that we need to take to try to recapture our culture? Because we're losing it. It is disappearing. Give us a first step, Dr. Mark Evans, of what you think that we need to take to start to recapture and protect what remains of our culture.
Well, the first step is to recognize that this problem is not going to solve itself, but right, there are things we can do collectively, but more importantly, there are things we can do individually in terms of self-education. You're never too old to start, and you're never too young to start. So parents and grandparents have to become aware of the need to convey to their children and grandchildren the best of our history, the best of our language, the best certainly of the creative arts. That's why I started a movement called Cultural Conservation. We have a website, culturalconservation.org. That's a good place to start for information. Okay. And parents and grandparents are the key. So often when I meet people who are culturally enlightened and aware that we have a past as well as a present, what I've run into is that they will invariably say, well, I was introduced to this by my parents, my grandparents, an aunt, an uncle, right, a teacher. And if you're a parent or you're a grandparent, you have to consciously make an effort to introduce your children and grandchildren to these things, because they're not going to get them in school. What I try, for example, in my books and through our organization, to tell the story of American music, your children and grandchildren are not getting mad in school. And that's something they should know. For example, very few people know that a composer signed the Declaration of Independence. He wasn't a very important composer. His name was Francis Hopkinson from Pennsylvania. But he did sign the Declaration, and he wrote some songs which were said to bring tears to the eyes of his good friend Thomas Jefferson. And they were dedicated to his other good friend, George Washington. And that's not a bad provenance for a composer of some art songs back in that century. And there are lots of stories, for example, about how the Stars and Stripes Forever, our national march, was written. Right. And the stories of the founding fathers of American music, people like Lowell Mason, who introduced music into the public schools, or John Knowles Payne, who was America's first music professor at Harvard years later. And there's so much to be absorbed, and the information is there. It's there certainly on the internet. It's there in a lot of other sources. In an act of shameless promotion, I might say it's there in the books that I've written, and certainly through organizations like ours, Cultural Conservation. And you can do it through a process of self-education. I had the great pleasure of getting to know the writer Ray Bradbury, was widely considered to be
the world's
most celebrated science fiction writer. And right. Ray was fond of telling people that when he came out of high school back in the Depression, he was too poor to go to college. So he went several days a week to the Los Angeles Public Library, and for 3 or 4 years, he educated himself. He would say, "I never graduated from university, but I graduated from the LA Public Library." Well, today, you can go to the library, but you don't have to necessarily, because we have
the internet.
Yeah,
that's true. The library
absolutely.
You can bring the library to you. That's what technology has done. Dr. Evans, final question has been posted by one of our producers on our Dial Interactive Board for you, and it is from our producer, Wolf. Is this part of the greater Spenglerian concept of the decline of the West? Your response?
I think it probably is. We probably don't have enough time to get into a discussion of Spengler.
Well, I plan on inviting you back,
but
Doctor.
Certainly, what we're talking about here is definitely part of the decline of our culture. And it isn't just a phenomenon in America. I have friends in the UK, in Australia, and I've had people tell me all over the world, certainly all over the Anglosphere, that this kind of decline is taking place.
It's
not irreversible. And there are things that you can do. We're hoping through cultural conservation, we can have a movement that leads us to believe that we have to devote the same care and attention to our cultural resources that we do to our natural resources. So, yes, it's part of the decline, but we can light candles instead of cursing the darkness.
Dr. Mark Evans, I would like to invite you back on this program in the future. We have so much more to discuss. My friends, the website, cultureconservation.org. Cultureconservation.org. Dr. Mark Evans, thank you so much. We will be speaking again, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Anytime. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you. You're listening to Your News Talk America. More after this.